happens. Come what may. So generally, when I talk about specificity, when I brought this conversation up to you, Tom, I was saying in terms of, like, I watch a lot of people just follow programs they found online or people that they, you know, are influencers online, and they're kind of following it aimlessly and maybe not be the best option for them. So I guess, like, the principle of specificity, we use this often for whatever our clients' goals are, right? I mean, what is your goal? Is your goal to run a marathon, or is your goal to lift a heavy one rep max, or is your goal to dunk a basketball? I mean, that's all gonna, that's all, you know, pertinent information on how you set up a program, right?
For sure. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I feel sometimes when I get a new client, I feel like, what's that, the guy from The Notebook. Don't even get me started. Because somebody had both of you have had been.
I'm just
forced.
Trying to figure out why The Notebook is coming to a training specific. It's, and I'm genuinely curious.
With a new client, sometimes I feel like the dude. Now, and you guys have both watched The Notebook, or have had to sit through a movie that you didn't want to watch.
I may have teared up at the end.
The only difference was that I happened to be alone on my couch eating ice cream by myself. But so, like, the dude, he's like, he's asking the girl, he's like, "What do you want? You guys remember that? What do you want?" I feel like that with
clients
sometimes.
There's so many memes from that.
Because, I'll get, like, a new client, and they're like, "Well, I want to lose weight." Okay, like, but what do you want? Like, yes, losing weight will come, right? Whatever we do, we're going to program to, like, obviously reach the client's, like, long-term goals, which is, like, a broad goal, like losing weight or getting stronger. But I go one step further, and I say, what do you want to do in here? Do you want, is there a movement that you want to do better? Do you hate a movement that you want to get better at? Or is there, like, is your squat lacking? Or do you want to just become a more overall athlete? I mean, that's, like, that's a huge avenue that I can take. But what do you want?
What do you want?
And I want to lose weight. What do you want? I just want to feel, what do you want? Yep. Like, so I find myself, like, Noah. There you go. I remember.
he was holding back on that. I think a lot of those people that I have issues speaking about what their goals are generally aesthetic related, and then there may be a little apprehensive to talk about it, really.
For sure, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, I mean, a lot of people that do start to get into lifting generally start from an appearance standpoint, which not everyone does that, but a large majority does. And obviously, specificity for you is if you hire a coach that is a powerlifter, and you don't give them a goal, they're just like, "Yeah, I just want to get stronger," and that's pretty much it. But they have aesthetic related goals. Obviously, the coach is going to focus more on performance improvement than maybe proper diet and nutrition first, or put that at the forefront of their coaching. Yeah, and obviously, Tom's like sitting here like, okay, yeah, whatever, aesthetic goals. And obviously Tom has a huge background in powerlifting, and obviously specificity in powerlifting is huge, especially when you're trying to improve your one rep, even at the elite level by a 5% lift. You know, that's crazy, or total.
Yeah, and a lot of times when people say, "I don't really," or they give you that answer that kind of indicates they don't really know what they want, it's then a series of questions after that to tease it out of them.
Right.
All right, what's your goal for this 8 weeks? Give me 5 goals for this 8 weeks and then rank them. And give me your goals for 6 months. And give me your goal for a year or 2 years.
For sure, yeah.
And then what lifts don't you want to do? What can we take out? What can we put in? Like, where are you trying to go with all this?
Right. I mean, a lot of the questions they probably haven't even asked themselves. You're like, I'm coming to you, and I just want to be strong as – I just want to be strong as fuck. Can you get me there? Like, that's where they're at. I mean, I find that too. Like, okay, I sign up. I want to get on bikini stage. Okay, well, I've never lifted a weight before ever. Okay, well, let's set some mini goals. You know what I mean?
For sure. I like to use milestones instead of like goals. Like, for some people, like, I feel like goals have been indicating that, like, if there's a goal, there's a finish line. And we know that we've been in fitness for however long we have been. Right, probably a cumulative of, 50 years, like, between all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in for, like, seriously for about, like, 10 years now, and you guys have obviously been into it for a while, too. So, like, I've been using, like, I've been using the verbiage milestones. or like the, because like a goal indicates that there's an end point, and we know that there's not. There's going to be more goals and goals. Yeah. So, what milestone do you want to hit this, you know, this spring? Do you want to? And I get actually, I've had people like, oh, I want to. That's when they actually say, I want to do 200 pound squat or whatever it may be. So, like you said, there's a lot of there's a lot to go into specificity, especially into our like main backgrounds.
Right, and now we're talking about specificity and training towards a goal, and I know, like, Tom, working with a lot of powerlifters, being a powerlifter yourself, and being able to analyze a lift, specificity can mean such, you know, you could put that under a microscope and say, okay, I need to tailor my training specifically because my lockout stinks on the deadlift.
It can get very, very nuanced.
Absolutely.
Especially at the elite level.
Yeah, and that's why you probably program people to use chains because it's a specific, like, it has a specific thing. It's not just cool, right?
Well, we can go back and forth about like accommodating resistance and whether I'll be the first person to tell you, like, when I first saw accommodating resistance become, I guess, popular on social media platforms, I mean, it's polarizing because you're looking at this, oh, that looks pretty badass, I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
without knowing, okay, maybe this might not be the best thing for me,
you know,
right?
It's funny you say that. I saw this, I need to unfollow Men's Health on like Facebook and shit because everything they come out with is just absolutely ridiculous. But I've seen like some, I remember seeing something, it had to be a couple years ago now, that why The Rock is so big or whatever. And it says, and the answer once you click the article is chains. He uses chains. And I'm like, like, that is such a bullshit.
Why
answer.
Use chains when bands will make a dance? I don't
understand. Oh, snap. Snap.
No, that you're right. And it's like, even when like Katsu or occlusion training was getting popular and, you know, there was more articles about it. I mean, Katsu training's been around for like years. You know, like I want to say like 1950 is like when it became like, it was research was actually done on this. It was like occluding a vein and doing like really low rep. It's like, I'm going to do occlusion training only because, you know, it's new. It's we see this with dieting. We see with a whole bunch of other things too. It's becomes a fad.
Yeah, it's
but
a
not
cycle.
In the application of it, right? It's
yeah.
It's
yeah. I've seen the same thing with German volume training. I mean, German volume training came out in the 60s and 70s, and then like you see this article of so and so doing German volume training, and like for the general person coming to the gym, they don't know what they're getting into.
Yeah, German volume training is a lot. Yeah. I mean, it's a badge of honor to say I've run it, and like I've done a German volume training program in the past, and
we've talked about it. Yeah.
It's just hard to keep up with. I mean,
for sure.
It sounds, I mean, and your over volume, like, your work capacity goes through the roof, but it's like, it's hard to maintain that and progressively overload that too.
Sure.
You don't know where you're at. It's just, it's tough. It's nice to throw in there like an overreaching like block. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm going to do this for like two to four maybe weeks. And then hopefully some of that hypertrophy that we did, that programming transitions into heavier lifting. I mean,
It's very specific on how you program that anyways, but I mean, we've talked about German volume training a couple times on this podcast, so we'll end it there.
Yeah, GVT program. If you guys are interested, we have a whole podcast on German volume training.
For sure.
And Kevin's experiences.
It's fun.
Yeah, fun. We'll go with that.
You feel like you're going to die. So.
He grew 3 inches taller after running GVT.
It's crazy. I'm just I had 3-inch platforms on, but you know. Yeah, so when I get a new client, like I always do like a, what's called a needs analysis. Just basically I take everything about that client, any information that I can, past injuries, what they, whether it's a general client, like a general just workout, like they want to come in, they want to lose weight or they want to get stronger, an athlete, or I have actually been kind of like going into more tactical athletes. Like I've had a few guys that are training for the police officer exam. I have a cop right now, firefighter, people getting ready for like military experience. So it's, when we're talking about like the specificity of each one, it's, you know, it varies a little bit.
Sure.
Right. And, going through the book and everything, actually studying for the tactical thing now, there was this section on, attributes, like basically what each athlete needs, and it had sports versus tactical, and I actually included a little bit of general in there, right? So when I have a new client, I kind of ask, what is your outcome of this? So when I get a general client, I'll say, okay, what's your outcome? And in typically, like, the outcome is, like, in terms of individual training sessions, it's like, it was a good training session or a bad training session. And it kind of breaks down to mental and physical adaptations, right? When we're looking at a general person, after a certain period of time, they want to just, they want to feel good. They want to look good, right? Like, I would say that that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, I mean, standard. Like, aesthetic goals, and they just, they want to look and feel better. They want to, you know, for sure, lose weight. They want to see abs, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. Gotcha. And then in terms of sports, we can break it down into, like, a little bit more. And in the book, it said, you know, a sports athlete, professional sports athlete, their outcome is win or lose, right? And you guys have the similar scenario. Brian, you have a bunch of physique athletes. They want to win, I would hope, right? I mean, I don't think
if they don't want to win, they're not my athletes.
I don't think you train people to go up there and lose. I mean, I was one of your athletes as well. And we'll maybe get into that in the future again, but
one day
we want to win. Like,
sure,
athletes want to win. And Tom, with you, with powerlifting, like, it's more, I would just suppose, I would say that I've never done a powerlifting meet, but, like, you obviously want to go and have a good day, right? No one wants to go and have a shitty day,
right? It's less about the win.
Right. It's more about,
but it's more like personal improvement.
Right.
It's, like,
yeah,
it's beating yourself.
Yes. Yeah. So winning against yourself and
it's winning. Right.
Unless there's money involved, then it's definitely about
if there's
winning.
Money involved sure. Or if there's, like, yeah, I mean,
or all time world records.
And there can be multiple avenues for money in terms of powerlifting too. So, like,
mm-hmm, sponsorships. Yeah.
Sponsorships. Mm-hmm. I mean, putting your, I would look at it now and being a little bit more immersed in it and being able to watch you guys do this is like, okay, I'm top 10. I'm in the top 10 in the world. And every time I do it, I want to beat my previous, but I also want to
move up.
I want to move up that rank. I want to get closer to that number one spot. And that's, I mean, it's competitive.
For sure.
And at that point, I mean, we'll get into it in a second about Tom and training specificity for that. Like, elite level trainers looking at, or athletes looking at their lifts a little bit more on our microscope. We're getting in a little bit. Go ahead, Kev. I want to hear the last part here about your athletes and
yeah,
the tackle,
so
too.
In terms of like sports, like win or lose, we break that down into positional adaptations, right? Whether they be a power lifter, a bodybuilder, Brad, quarterback, he wants to get better at his position. So I'm obviously going to take that into effect. And in terms of his programming, I'm going to program him very different than I would, especially when we're getting into preseason, which we are now, very different than I would a general person. But the tactical athlete, it was kind of like a holy shit, like, it woke me up a little bit. In the book, it literally said outcome, life or death. And I'm like, fuck, I was not ready for that, right? And I'm like, wow, all right. So in terms of, like, a tactical athlete, Brian, you're a firefighter, so
sure.
You are a tactical athlete, right? And when we're talking about, like, life or death, and, like, how do, unless I get a firefighter who is like, I want to climb the ladder faster. Oh, okay, then I can program that. But, like, just becoming a better, like, tactical athlete in terms of, like, firefighting, I'm looking at way more of, like, physiological adaptations, like performing under duress, performing under stress. Say, right. Like, so, like, we can even take that into, like, general workouts. If you like a bodybuilding style, guess what? Yeah, you're doing 100 drop sets, right? You're taxing your body. Like, I'm trying to tax your body maybe more physiologically and being, I don't like to say functional, like we've talked about this, but, like, being more functional in terms of firefighting and whole body movements.
Right.
The Turkish get up, for example, like,
right,
it was horrible. Like, yeah. I hate Turkish get ups, but,
well, I would, like, say, like, even functional training, going through, like, the fire academy and mm-hmm. then doing my own stuff and understanding what it takes to be in a,
for
you
sure.
know, an IDLH area where it's immediately danger to life and health.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're in a situation like that, it's not necessarily, like, I would say when you talk about functional training, I think you need to be emotionally functional. Like, you mm-hmm. need to understand, control your breathing. You need to calm yourself down, but still be able to perform the duties that are required, because in a situation like that, it's move fast and hurry,
mm-hmm.
but you need to keep yourself calm.
Definitely.
And the heart, like, specifically for firefighters, when you are working yourself extremely hard and you're trying to move fast because you know how dangerous it is that you're, you know, mm-hmm. the things you're doing, you're consuming air at a really quick rate and you only have one tank. And if you mm-hmm. exhaust that tank, guess what? You're out and now yeah. you can no longer do your duties. And if there's somebody there in a building and you were worked up and breathing the air, you know, a 30 minute air bottle down in 10 minutes, guess what? You're no good to the people in the building or the crew you're with. So
yeah,
there's a lot
they
of things
save you as well. So like physiological adaptations is definitely one of the things I focus on with a lot of my tactical athletes. Pat, one of the guys that I have training for the police academy.
Sure.
One of the main things that I love to do the last 10 to 15 minutes of our session was a circuit where he didn't know what he was doing. I just told him. We went in the red room, and I just fired off at him. And, like, sometimes those circuits would last 5 seconds. I'd be like, okay, push-ups. Then 5 seconds would go by. All right, burpee. And then he would do two, and then it's just, like, constant, like, stimulus.
Stimulus, unpredictable.
Oh, throwing it at him. And like, that's one of the things that, you know, especially reading up into the book, like, I kind of put together, but like I never realized the severity of it, right? It is life or death, and the better they can be, the better you guys can be. The safer everyone's going to be on the crew in the building, right? Like everybody. So I mean, when we're talking about specificity, it's like this is a tree that has a lot of branches. This is a broad stroke of a very narrow aspect of training. When you're talking specificity, it opens up a world of responses.
Yeah, like trying to like study for this podcast and take some notes. It took me like 4 days because I just kept going off on tangents every time.
Go in any direction you want to. And obviously, the base, the foundation of this is okay. Specificity. Train for your goals. I mean, that in itself is a broad statement.
Yeah, I feel like I wrote a 20-page paper on this.
Right,
like,
and this could be a progressive thing. You're constantly looking at specificity in terms of how do I get a little bit better at what I'm doing or what I'm trying to accomplish. If you've reached a point where you don't need to worry about specificity, congratulations, you've reached the finish line. You don't have to do any of this anymore. Why do you still come to the gym? I don't know. But specificity, obviously, you know, like again, it's multifaceted. You can do it in any point of training. Tom, let's talk about like moral powerlifting too, because I feel like there's a ton of stuff we can go into this, but I feel like there's some things that people should hear, especially if they're looking to improve their lifts. Like I see a lot of things like, for example, like form breakdowns or evaluating a client's squat and noticing that there's weakness in sticking points in the squat, sticking points in the deadlift, sticking points in the bench. And then how do I train, you know, specificity to improve a lift like that, you know?
Yeah, so specificity is kind of like intrinsically built into everything that we do in powerlifting. First thing I do when I get a new client is ask for videos. Like, what do you have any videos of your previous lift? Show me your one rep maxes so I can see where you break down. See where we got to focus on. Like, if your back is collapsing during a squat, then we got to throw some upper back work in there and really hammer on that. The other things that really need to come into play for powerlifting is your lifestyle. Are you a guy that's on your feet all day? Mm-hmm. Or are you sitting at a desk job? Cause that's going to impact the amount of volume that I can program for you to do. How many days a week can you work out? How long can you work out for? Do I have you for 45 minutes? Cause then we got to get real specific with your workout, mm-hmm. unless I have you for 90 minutes and then we can get a little more general with it.
No doubt about it.
Sure. I like that you said, how many days can you work out? Because I feel like I can work out every day. No, don't bullshit me.
Yeah. That's why questionnaire it says, how many days can you realistically
100%
commit to exercise? Realistically.
Oh, I've had people say I can work out 7 days a week. I'm like, okay, great. Like, good that you have that free time, but you're not going to work out 7 days a week.
If you're working out effectively, you're probably not.
Now I'm going to program whatever rest days I want is basically what that means.
To me, so if you can work out 7 days a week, that means I have more freedom.
For sure.
Yeah, it's less work. Like if someone say I can't work out Wednesdays and I can't wait work train Sundays or whatever it might be. I mean,
and if they don't I'll ask them, what days do you like to work out and when do you like to work out? If they don't like working out on Sunday, for example, if they're like, hey, that's my lazy day, sometimes I would rather have you be comfortable through in your life and having the gym as kind of like an outlet and we say not a hobby, but as something that you look forward to. Instead, if I have somebody coming in and like they have to work out I have to work out on a Sunday, like, oh, it's Sunday, I have to work out, football's on all day, let's go get this over with. I take that into consideration. And I mean, programming, if if their programming calls for it and they actually have like a super big goal, that's not going to be an issue for them. But like, I do get a lot of general clients as well. Brad,
even that too. Yeah. Like if they're setting it, they're saying that Sunday is a day of rush for them and they want to watch football and stuff. It's like, they may not be upset about going to the gym as much as it's, there's that much more distraction and potential for them not to go and follow their program. Like, oh, I got stuff going on and I lost track of time. Next thing you know, they're, then you know the new week begins and they think they got to make it up and it screws up the entire training program. So I certainly understand that. Mm-hmm. And going back to duration, that's a really good point. Like I can't program someone for an hour and a half when they only have 30 to 45 minutes to train. That's huge, Tom.
Mm-hmm. The other one is it's obviously recovery and diet. Are you sleeping 8 hours a night or are you sleeping less because you're working two jobs? Like
night shifts.
Right. Night shifts screw you up. 24-hour shifts can screw you up for that next day of training. You know that all too well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Sleep pattern, I mean, we can talk about sleep, and I'm sure that'll be another podcast in itself. It's just, you know, periodizing programming or structuring your training program based on your shifts and how well you sleep. You know, I've done that, and I've had to go from, for at certain points when I was on I'm in a busy station now, but there's sometimes where I'll only train four times a week as opposed to five, just simply because I know that if I go and train, I'm not going to get anything out of it. I might go and move around a little bit and it's fine, but I don't chalk it up as a loss. I just kind of say, okay, it is what it is. You know, I'd rather go to get a training session and I'm feeling 100%.
And I think that's the difference between an advanced athlete or somebody who kind of knows the ins and outs of fitness rather than the person. Hey, you went to the gym and going to the gym at any time is better than not going, right? We see that all the time, especially with, like, I see it a lot with, like, fitness influencers.
Yeah. And I agree with that to an extent. Again, I think specificity for myself is I need to perform well every week, and if I have a crappy evening or a night and I'm up for, 40 hours, that's going to – sure. I could go and half-ass a workout, and then it just delays recovery even further, so then I can't do anything. Also, if I squat crappy on a Monday, guess what? I'm probably not going to deadlift all that Grady on a Thursday, whatever it might be. It might overlap or cause interference with that training plan or that day.
For sure. And I say, like, the advanced versus non-advanced because, like, advanced, like, if you had a – shitty shift, right? That was kind of tough to say.
Shitty shift.
We've been breaking balls about specificity. Shitty shift is the new one. So,
no one screwed up that word yet.
Right. You had one on the earlier one, and I gave you a 0.5 because there's like specificity. So I gave you half a point for that.
But,
anyways, the advanced athlete versus the non-advanced, if your program calls for Thursday, you're supposed to max out or whatever, or you have a very like an RPE of 10, like double or something, like a mean lift, and you've had a shitty shift, you've been up for whatever 30 hours, you haven't really eaten much, you probably know, hey, I'm gonna call it today, I'm gonna recover today, and I'm gonna do this on Thursday or on Friday instead, and we'll take it from there. So, I mean, when we're talking about you have to go, I've seen these on Facebook, Instagram, go to the gym any chance you get and like get your workouts in and do whatever. And like, yes, that's great. But when we're talking about specificity and what you have to do in your program and what kind of athlete you are, sometimes the best thing to do is to call it and say, I'm going to take a rest day. And we've talked about rest days before and recovery.
Sure.
There's so many avenues of recovery as well. So this was another tangent that I got.
As long as you're not doing that 4 days in a row, like, you're probably...
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. If you're, like, on your fourth day...
If you're using it as an excuse.
Okay. Yeah, if you're on your fourth day of, like, oh, I need a rest day, go to your doctor. You have something going on.
But...
That's good. Even going to, like, bodybuilding and stuff like that. So I watched, like young athletes or just young trainees that are just starting out and they're... idolizing professional IFBB bodybuilders, right? And not understanding the full context or being naive to the fact that these guys are probably on a significant amount of androgenic supplementation or drugs, PEDs, whatever you want to call it, and wanting to mimic their training programs, watching them. And also just going on their Instagram and watch them do their sets, like they actually train, like they're going to, their head's going to explode every set. That's not necessarily what's happening behind the scenes. While a lot of these guys can, you know, handle quite a bit of volume and recover much faster than the average person.
Sure.
Those are things to take in consideration. Like, you know, just because Kai Greene's doing abs every day before his programming and then doing 2 hours worth of direct chest movements doesn't mean that you have to either. You know, yeah. Obviously that's, you know, specific to him and understanding. I mean, I'd hate to throw in like a pitch, but I mean, it pays to have a coach that kind of that has done this before or can guide you in the right way, you know, especially if you're in that 1 to 3 years of training range. I mean, that's like vital to have a good understanding. If you can get a good foundation between your start and like 3 years into this, I mean, you can take this for, you know, as long as you want.
Yeah. That's one thing I try to stress with the people that I coach is to understand why you are doing a specific movement and what the goal of that movement is. You know, I don't want my clients to just be doing something for the sake of doing something. I want you to really understand what it is so you can connect to it and kind of just feel better connected to your program and feel like it's really tailored to you.
For sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Like having that like knowledge of, you know, I'm doing, you know, the chains or whatever because, or like Spoto press to help a specific part of my bench press.
Yep.
You know, that is now you're connecting on a mental, like a mental level. You're like, okay, I'm doing this for this specific reason. And now you actually have kind of like, it's funny. It's kind of like, it'll be funny to say, it's kind of silly. You have an emotional connection to it because it's like, you know that you're going to get better at this. Like, this is going to help this main, like you want a big bench press. Why am I not doing bench press? I'm doing Spoto press. So it's like, yeah, I'm using the barbell, but like, why am I not benching? But now you have an emotional connection to this, specific movement that you're like, okay, this is going to help. And now people want to do it more.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And when you tailor a program like that and add specificity into someone's program to improve a certain lift, most likely those exercises that you're prescribing somebody are generally not the best for ego boosting. Like for me to do block pulls, like I was doing block pulls the other day, deficit deadlifts. Those were really humbling because I've noticed I don't get much, like a lot of leg drive out of a deadlift because I have really long legs, but it was interesting to do that. But I know that like Mike and Ant were doing rack pulls the week before, and I happen to do rack pulls, and like I'm really good at rack pulls, and I'm really good at the top end of my deadlift. Anything past the knee, I'm very comfortable saying I'm going to be able to pull it. I'm slow off the floor, so I know my training can't mimic theirs because they're working the top end of their deadlift, whereas I need to work the bottom. But if I want a nice ego boost, I can always go and do rack pulls. You know what I mean?
Want humbling exercise? Try the face pull and press.
I've done it before with you.
Yeah, it's very humbling. It sucks. Or a Y raise.
Remember, you're adding that for Brad increasing the shoulder strength, and it kind of mimics where you're going to be in position for throwing the ball too.
Cool. Keeping that position of the face pull and press and that pressing motion is actually also going to engage the lower and the mid traps. So like,
I felt my core.
Yeah. Oh, core. I mean, but like, and those middle to low traps, like a lot of people forget that like the traps start really low, and it's kind of like this T almost of a muscle. It goes up your spine and to your shoulder blades. So I mean, those middle and low, like lower traps, get often they don't get trained. They'll get trained like indirectly from whatever you're doing, but like that really that pressing motion with the cable, that's humbling, man. 30-40 pounds.
That was tough. The first couple of times I did it, you were standing there like, you just do a shoulder press, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't connect the exercise because like the pulley wasn't necessarily moving anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was just me like trying to lift the weight up and like
keeping it
wrap
stable.
The angle around the
It sucks.
It was horrible. Like it was really difficult, and then you got to like externally rotate your shoulder. Yeah, it was a little weird. It's highly suggest trying those out. People are gonna like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Maybe you could do a video on that. Where Kevin will show you how to do it in person.
I actually want to do a video on it soon, so.
You guys, I mean, we were talking about accommodating resistance earlier. Do you guys generally use a lot of that for, and if you do, what are your reasonings behind it?
I don't.
I think Tom's probably better.
I've been lifting for 17 years. I've never used any sort of accommodating resistance. It can be an interesting way to switch things up, but I don't necessarily think that it is better than any other way, and I don't necessarily think that it's the way to train. It's if you have someone with a weak point, like if they're the top of their bench lockout is weak, you could add bands to increase the tension at the upper end, or you could just do pin presses from below the same point. Yeah. So
that's always
there's options.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and I think we've talked about bands before. I think with Mike, bands.
Yeah, we did talk about accommodating resistance. Yep.
I find with, I said it in that podcast as well, with bands, I feel really, like, I don't like how unstable I feel. Yeah. So sometimes, and you know, ego comes into it a little bit. Like, if I can do whatever on my normal bench press, well, I should be able to do, whatever I have in my mind.
I would definitely not give bands or chains to like a beginner or intermediate level lifter.
Yeah.
Setting up bands and chains gets really tricky.
For sure. And yeah.
Like people will set up orange bands on the bench and it's just like, that's going to get real heavy real quick and you're going to hurt yourself.
Yeah. And like I said, I feel incredibly unstable with bands. I feel like the bar's moving all over the place. Maybe that I need more work on my stabilizing muscles, but like said,
the bamboo bar will work really
well. Yeah, the bamboo bar is awesome. I like I like using that versus like putting bands on the bench press, for example.
Well, I agree with accommodating resistance. Like I've tried movements with accommodating resistance. The only thing I didn't like about it is that for example, the bench press, I had to decrease my load on the bench press because the band tension at the top was the strongest, and where at the bottom of the rep is I'm going a lot lower. So I feel like I wasn't training enough off the bottom rep of my chest. It was just, it was the top. It was the top end of the rep. Yeah. Whereas I had done specifically the same standard bench press and then added in some type of accessory day where I was doing pin presses from the rack and not getting that, you know, the eccentric portion. I'm taking that completely out of the factor, which was, you know, I always liked that, like not using any of the stretch reflex from a band or a pin press. You're starting right from the pins. I mean, it's challenging. It's not easy to do.
That's why I like that. I like the hammer strength bench press that we have too. The lay down one.
Oh yeah. Yep.
I love that one. Cause you can like with the plates.
Concentric motion or contracting the muscle rather than where a bench press where you're lengthening the muscle first. Right. You know, that's why people are like, I don't know why I can't do as much on the first. That's why.
Yeah, and I love that because you can also, like, with that one, you can put plates on the floor, too, like, and you can start at different levels.
Yeah, you can cheat.
Yeah, one of my clients had, like, a really, like, hard time getting, like, really deep in his push-ups.
Yeah.
So I had him, like, take those plates out and start from the floor level. So he's starting from a completely extended point in his chest and basically where you are on the floor, right? He was doing a lot of push-ups too. Like, don't get me wrong, but like that was a machine that I loved to like put him through because he was starting from that really extended portion of the chest and pushing into a contracted state as you would starting from the floor on a push-up and pushing yourself up. So, like accommodating resistance. I feel like I agree with you, Tom. I think there's a lot of different ways that you can do it, and I don't think it's necessary. The rack doesn't get big because you use chains or, you're not going to get big because bands will make you dance, right? It's just,
he gets big from drinking Terramana, so let's be real here.
It's good. It's good. I always tell people with celebrity.
I'm working on that.
All summer, I was testing it out all summer, that's all.
Oh, it's good, yeah. I work at Luna as well, so we don't have Terramana yet, but we do have a lot of good tequilas.
Heard they got some cookies down there now too.
Yeah. That's not good for my cutting.
Sunday's bakery.
My cutting phase. Let me tell you, an enchilada and a Sunday's cookie is not going to do well for me. But I tell people all the time with celebrity workouts and stuff like that, you guys got to remember that these transformations that these celebrities do, whether it be an actor or a professional bodybuilder. Or professional like powerlifting. Sometimes this is all these guys do. They have the time to do 2 hours in the gym. this is their job, like professional bodybuilders. They train.
It's easy when you have a gym traveling with you all over the world.
For sure. Yes. Yeah, for sure. And like, they have the money to pay a dietitian. They don't have to cook any. They might not cook any of their meals. They have the money to buy 18 pounds of chicken a day and eat it, you know. And to them, this is what's going to push them to the next level. So for them, there is no, you know, I'll go out on the weekend, right? Or I'll go out Friday. This is their thing, right? So with celebrity workouts, celebrity trainers, or training sessions and stuff like that, take ease. Take a concept from it.
There's very few celebrity trainers that I've listened to just because I've heard too many of them say, you know, be careful of doing, you know, wide stance lifts because you'll become too wide. Like wide grip lat pull downs, you'll become wider. That's how you get wider. So,
right.
I stopped reading after that. Someone literally just posted that within the last week. Trainer, like, yeah, he's reading. He took a picture of something on a, like a magazine or something like that.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Good thing not many people read magazines anymore. So,
mental health. Mental health, the absolute.
Train wide, get wide.
Yes.
Negative.
Yeah. Yeah. Not.
I used
happening.
To believe that.
Yeah. I used to too. Yeah.
At one point, maybe a lot of people did because you heard it. It had to be true.
Yeah, I saw.
And then
it,
then you started questioning everything in life, and then next thing you know, you're digging through PubMed to look at can you really get wider from doing wide vertical pull downs.
People seem to forget that magazines were the first internet, right? It's on a magazine. It must be true.
Oh, that's how.
Right.
Flex Magazine.
Oh yeah,
Muscular Development. That's where I started.
Yeah, I started.
Dude, I used to listen literally, and this is not. I mean, it's a joke. A lot of people will joke around about this, but like Phil Heath and. Mm-hmm. Other bodybuilders, Jay Cutler, say, yeah, like fish with thinner skin. And later on, I realize they're both idiots.
Yeah.
And they don't know what they're talking about. Yeah. No offense to their careers. They're fantastic. I mean, they're amazing bodybuilders. But when it comes to nutritional advice, just leave it to the
these
to your coaches.
These people forget
man.
That they have coaches.
Yeah.
Start
giving out advice about stuff, and it's just.
Yikes.
And that was when they weren't talking about.
Yeah, like Ronnie Coleman on the Rogan podcast being like, I was 0.3% body fat.
0.3% body fat.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you would. No.
I love you, Ronnie. Yeah. But
how many questions you get about body fat? Like, what do you think I am? I'm probably like 12, you think? I'm like, probably like 25, 28, somewhere around that range.
Really? I actually got a good post. That Dennis post.
We got some questions here. We're going to find out how much weight Mr. Spellman lost.
Yeah, I love that.
He had a really cool transformation.
Really cool.
Kevin did the training nutrition for. We're going to post that. We're going to post on our social media to see if someone can guess it. What's that?
Probably get that done today.
We're going to do it today.
Yeah, I have.
Amongst the other things we're going to do today. A million things.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add to specificity? I think if you guys have any questions on specificity, you can always message us. Tom's on social media. We also have emails we'll give at the end of the podcast. But again, it's specificity is geared towards what you want to do. I'm not saying you can't follow a program you follow online if you're looking for aesthetic changes. I think there's some leeway in someone that's trying to improve their general fitness and improve their body composition. But when it comes to improving performance, I think specificity has a much better place there. I wouldn't say that if your goal is to, grow as much muscle mass as possible, that you should be doing low volume workouts.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah. But again, specificity can be a broad definition, and if you have performance goals, I would highly suggest, mapping things out, getting some, milestones set up, right?
For sure.
If you're doing this on your own, definitely ask yourself, what is the point of this exercise? What's it going to do for me? Am I just doing it because I saw somebody else doing it, or is this what I need?
Specificity is the reason why not only we have jobs as trainers, but we're good at our jobs. Anyone can make you sore. I mean, I can write, and I would say this with like the people who want to lose 20 pounds. I can make you lose 20 pounds in 2 weeks if I really want to. Right. But is it healthy and is it going to benefit you long run? Probably not. But specificity, there's one for me. Specificity is the reason why we have jobs, and tell us what you want.
How many times are you going to reference a notebook on this?
Hey, it's a great movie. All right.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about specificity and powerlifting. And
let's get into it. Oh, here it is.
So in powerlifting, there's really two extreme schools of thought. On the one hand, you got like the West Side method, where they almost never do competition style squat, bench, and deadlift. Like, you'll never see them do straight bar squats. You'll never see them do just a plain old bench press. They're always doing like cambered bars, duffalo bars, bands, chains, what have you. So in that regard, they're not quote unquote specific in powerlifting. And so in powerlifting, the specific would be competition style squat, bench, deadlift. That is the goal.
Right.
So you have like West Side on the one hand, and on the other hand, you have specificity. So in powerlifting, when you talk about specificity training, it's the people who only do competition style squat, bench, deadlift. People will probably recognize like John Hack and Yuri Belkin as two of the prominent male powerlifters who kind of train in that style. They're literally only doing squat, bench, deadlifts. They're doing probably high intensity, low volume work. There's very little accessories that go along with that. They're probably doing squat, bench, deadlift multiple times a week as well.
When I see John Hack, I always see him doing his heavy singles almost every week, and I think a lot of people get confused. So, like, wait, how? Why can he do that?
So part of the reason why you would train in a specific style like that,
yep,
is you've kind of maxed out your weight class, and you're not trying to add a lot of muscle mass. You're not trying to gain weight. John Hack is setting all-time world records in the 198 weight class, and he's already maxed out that weight class. So he's not going to go into the gym and do 32 reps of a barbell row and 50 reps on the hack squat, because he's not trying to gain a lot of mass. He's trying to take the muscle he has and eke the strength out of it. So he's keeping his reps real low. He's keeping his training very specific. Same with Yuri Belkin. He's all-time world record in the 220 class. So just because you see these guys training this way on Instagram doesn't mean that that's a good way for you to train. Most people will fall generally in the middle of these two extremes, where you want to kind of swing from a high volume, more general type workout with heavy compound movements into the more specific style, or what we would call a power phase or a peak. In the more general phase, you're looking at the weaknesses of that specific athlete. Like, where does your squat break down? Where does your bench break down? Are you weak off your chest? Are you weak at the top? And then the accessory movements to your three main lifts are all geared towards fixing the weaknesses. And as soon as you fix one weakness, your weakness moves to a different area. So your weakness in a lift is constantly moving. So you have to be able to objectively evaluate that yourself, or get a good coach who can evaluate that for you and help you with your programming.
Yeah, and you would know, I mean, at what point to say, okay, if you're saying like off the bench press, your top end of your rep is weak and you're working it, how many weeks do you work that until you say, okay, I got to pull back a little bit, because I'm not really getting the most out of the bottom part of my rep, especially if you're using some kind of resistance, additional resistance, you know? So I definitely understand that. We made that mention earlier in the podcast too, and knowing your limitations, you know, like obviously if you start seeing improvement in your, say your pin presses, and now all of a sudden your pin presses is like, oh, it's my favorite lift to do, right there, say, okay, now I got to start looking at my other part, other part of the rep. You know what I mean? Let's see where that went, and see if that transitioned or correlated into stronger lifts, full rep lifts, you know? So I definitely think obviously having a coach there is good, but knowing and recognizing when, you know, when do I stop and say, okay, I made improvement here. I know I have. How many weeks, how many pounds do you need to put on that lift? Is it just an overall comfort level? I mean,
and the flip side of that is also recognizing where you actually have a muscular weakness versus a technique weakness.
I mean, how often do you see that? I mean, how many people have you changed just a quick little technique change, and all of a sudden
every single person,
all of them,
almost everyone.
Yeah,
I could say you've done it with me, because, dude, just like with changing my hand grip, getting my feet placed in the right position, like I felt like I was comfortable with my other lifts, but my bench literally went up nearly 40 pounds. In literally a 3 month period.
Sure.
It's a short, I mean, I've been lifting for a long time, so it's not like, not that I did a ton of bench pressing before, but just like a quick technique change allowed me to push through. I mean, I did 365 for a crappy one rep max before we started this contest prep, which is a bounce, kind of a bounce off the chest to being able to do it for easy triples with a rest, with a pause at the bottom. So
I got to shout out my man Cal here because
This is perfect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When we first started working together, his max squat was 315 and his form was not so good.
Mm-hmm.
And just last week or 2 weeks ago, he squatted 415 with perfect form, and he probably could have done it for a triple.
It looked and fast.
Yeah,
this past week he was doing 360 for sets of five. So and the awesome. Only thing we focused on for that whole training block was his form.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't push the weight. We didn't. It was just form.
Yeah, people get caught up in weight a lot. Like that, I tell my clients, I don't know, probably every day, whether it's on the scale or it's on the, in this case, on the bar, you know, try not to get too caught up in weight. It will, you know, given the right programming, it will go up. But like I focus a lot of time on just, most of my training blocks form. Because again, they may have been just doing it one way and they may have made gains doing it incorrectly. Or they saw some guy on Instagram or some girl on Instagram doing it in a bullshit way. And like they figure that's right. Form has so much to do with it. And I've seen Cal, he was in and out like a few times. He mentioned that he'd hit something on him. I'm like, holy shit, wow. he's been doing awesome. So kudos to him and kudos to you. Obviously, he's a direct reflection of you as well. That's awesome to see. Like, that was a big
job. Rewarding as a coach, too, to see like what you're practicing. Like, you're practicing. This is what you believe. These are the fundamentals that you've instilled on or are giving people. And when they pay off, it's like, oh, thank God.
It works, right?
It worked.
Yeah, right?
It worked. Eureka. It's good. And actually, matter of fact, he's not even done yet. He's got more to go.
That's going
to
be exciting.
He got his first meet coming up here.
We just started his peak. So
yeah, he was saying, he goes, Tommy wrote me the dopest peak. I'm like, you're excited?
Awesome, dude. That's
he's telling me his numbers he wants to hit. We'll keep them hush-hush for now because I don't want to spoil it, but I'm pretty sure he'll be close. So he's excited.
Cool. Super cool.
I love watching that stuff, man.
For sure, yeah.
I love watching anyone PR. I watched somebody PR the other day. I think he had like a 60-pound PR or whatever he said. He lifted 315. It was a 60-pound PR. It was
holy shit,
the coolest thing ever. It was a grind. He maintained pretty good posture throughout the entire lift. It was cool, man.
Weight is relative. Whatever the PR is, that's awesome. It's awesome to see.
Yeah. Especially when you're following the program and it's working, it's paying off.
This is where we say again, what do you want?
What do you want?
So,
the hardest question is not really what you want out of your program. Is what's for dinner?
Oh, what's for dinner?
Yeah. All right.
Where do you want to go eat?
Yeah. Right. There's a constant battle.
Generally, when I get that question from like Alyssa, it's always, please tell me sushi. That's what she's telling. In my mind, it says, please tell me you want sushi.
For me, like, that's the hardest question for me. What do you want to eat? Because, like, if you look at, like, the restaurants, let's say there's 10 restaurants in the area. They each have, like, 20 things on the menu that I could want. That's, like, 200 choices. There could be a burger from one place be exactly the same as a burger from another place. But, hey, like, I'm, like, that's still, like, another choice. Like, there's...
Yeah.
Listen, anything, right?
Anyone that's going to answer the question, be more specificity about what foods you want.
Oh, my God, yes.
What are you in the mood for? Be more specific, please.
Anything.
All right, guys, thanks for listening to our podcast on specificity. And, if you want to reach out to us, you can reach out to us via email. You can reach Tom at tom@upstateempirefit.com. Kevin is at kevin@upstateempirefit.com. And you guys at brian@upstateempirefit.com. Social media, Kev, what's your handle on there?
KatieCon 520.
This is the fourth podcast he said he's going to change his
handle. I'm taking suggestions. I'm at a blank.
If you made it this long in the podcast, we're taking suggestions.
DM me whatever you think my handle should be.
Whatever you think about Kevin.
Even if it's like shithead 520, whatever.
Tom, what's your Instagram handle?
TDavis514.
Mine's at DevsBrian. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you guys listening this far. Again, if you have questions, feel free to reach out.